I'm Steve Norman reporting. Britain's ambassador to the U.S. says his country believes it is possible to address President Trump's issues about the Iran nuclear deal in time to prevent him from pulling out of the agreement. Kim Derrick appeared on the CBS News program Face the Nation.
We have ideas. We think that we can find some language, produce some action that meets the president's concerns.
British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson is in Washington joining the leaders of Germany and France who've come to the United States in recent weeks hoping to persuade President Trump not to abandon the nuclear deal. Mr. Trump has until the 12th of May to decide. Meantime, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has warned President Trump that leaving the nuclear deal would be, in his words, a historic regret. Powerful bomb ripped through a crowded mosque being used as a voter registration center in southeastern Afghanistan. Abid Shah Ansari is the provincial head of public health. He says at least 12 people died there. 33 were wounded. He said one of the killed was a woman. The attack came hours after unknown gunmen in northern Afghanistan, a region there, kidnapped 7 engineers, mostly Indian nationals. No one claimed responsibility. The Taliban has denied involvement. Late last month, a suicide bomber killed nearly 60 at voter ID card centers in Kabul. Nigerian police and officials there say at least 45 people were killed in the northern village of Gwaska in the Kaduna State, in an area known for incidents of armed bandits. Bandits believed to have had hideouts in the dense forest. This is VOA News. North Korea says its intention to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula has not the results of U.S.-led sanctions and pressure, and accused Washington of misleading public opinion. Grant Newsham, senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, tells VOA he believes the pressure campaign directed at both Pyongyang and China has gained some success.
I think this has all led to Kim, his sort of smiling face and his willingness apparently to talk. A willingness to talk, however, should not be taken as a willingness to give up nuclear weapons, however.
As the U.S. and North Korea prepare for proposed dialogue, the two Korean leaders have pledged complete denuclearization at their summit, which was April the 27th, but did not provide an outline of how to achieve that. Trump administration took a hard line in trade talks with China last week, demanding a $200 billion cut in the China trade surplus, with the U.S. sharply lower tariffs and an advanced technology subsidy. Meantime, President Trump, attending a business roundtable in the U.S. city of Cleveland, Ohio, spoke about U.S. trade deficits with nations such as China and Mexico.
We have deficits with everybody. And don't let anyone ever tell you that trade deficits are okay. They're not okay. They're not okay. We have massive trade deficits with China. We have massive trade deficits with Mexico. Who would think? $100 billion trade deficit with Mexico. Who would even think that? And that doesn't include lots of other problems. You see that on the border. I really thought they'd be much tougher and better to us on the caravan. Didn't quite work out, but that's okay. That's okay.
President Trump referring to a caravan of migrants from Central America who traveled across Mexico to reach the U.S. border with Mexico late last month, only to be told by U.S. immigration they could not enter the U.S. Iran-backed Shiite Hezbollah group and its political allies looked set to win more than half the seats in Lebanon's first parliamentary election in nearly a decade. Under election rules, voters are registered in areas from their ancestors where they grew up and saw people traveling across the country in order to take part in the voting, this woman among them.
I traveled from Beirut and left home at 5:30 a.m. to come and vote. We've been waiting for the election for 9 years.
Unofficial results from Sunday indicate that Western-backed Prime Minister Saad al-Riri would emerge as the Sunni leader with the biggest bloc in the 128-seat parliament, making him the front-runner to form the next government, though he did lose seats. Get more news at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Schools open tomorrow, Tuesday, in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, but many children will attend without the usual free food.
It is not only the problem of children needing food, but it is a countrywide problem where the educational system is crumbling.
Mpalanda Shangwe is the second deputy secretary of the banned opposition Pudemo Party. IGA invites South Sudan warring parties to another consultation this week in Ethiopia. Burundi's opposition accuses the government of harassment and intimidation during the ongoing referendum campaign. And South African mine workers want more security as seven miners died from the latest accident last week.
Inside deep mines like this, surely you must have a research that always improves the technology of detecting what leads to be the cause of the accident.
Joseph Matunjwa is the president of the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union of South Africa. And more people are displaced from heavy rains in Kenya. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Schools in the Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, are set to open tomorrow, Tuesday, but many children will be attending without the usual free food. Lucky Mlovu, the Deputy Prime Minister's Office Director of Children's Services, said on Sunday that the UNICEF initiative Neighborhood Care Point was short of food because donors were focusing on other countries. This comes at a time when some reports say King Mswati III wore a watch worth $1.6 million at his 50th birthday. Mpalanda Shwangwe is the second deputy secretary of the banned opposition Pudemo Party. He says the situation in Eswatini goes beyond the lack of food for children to the inability of the government to pay its teachers on time.
The situation here, it's a very, very, very bad situation, especially because it is not only the problem of children needing food, but it is a countrywide problem where the educational system is crumbling down, where government cannot pay in time fees for the schools, cannot pay in time assistant workers who are assisting in the running of schools, let alone provide enough food for the children.
I was talking about this Lucky Lovu. He said that the reason that there's this food shortage for children is because the donors who normally give food supply have decided that they are not going to do so because they believe there's enough money in Swaziland, but it's not being used wisely.
That is correct. If you see the extravagance that the government is going through, more especially recently, we have just celebrated 50 years of independence and 50 years birthday of our king. You can tell that there is money in this country. The only problem is that it is wrongly used. Yes, I agree with the donors and I support their stand that they should withdraw this funding. In fact, I would like to put the blame at the doorsteps of the very same donors, the EU in particular, because the EU has taken it upon itself to actually run the educational system of Swaziland. And we don't know why they have been doing this. They have been paying for the free primary education for government, and this has been giving government enough money to waste such that they think the issue of feeding or looking after students is somebody's else duty, not their duty.
King Mswati III, what is he saying? There are some reports here that he was seen wearing a watch that's worth a U.S. $1.6 million at his 50th birthday celebration. What is he saying? Does he have a role to play if there's no food for the children?
As the head of government and as the head of the country, he's supposed to be the first person to care for these children. But most unfortunately, it looks like he is a distant away from reality. I believe that maybe, I don't know how, but he seems not to be aware of the sufferings of his people. If you look at the extravagant waste of public funds, imagine on top of those watches, on top of those diamonds, we have witnessed a buying of a 200 million jet. So you can actually see that there is enough money to take care of everybody.
Mpalana Shangwe is the second deputy secretary of the banned opposition Pudemo party. He was speaking with me from the Eswatini capital, Mbabane. In South Africa, the National Union of Mine Workers says it wants to meet with the management of the Sibanye Stillwater mine to discuss safety. This after seven of the 13 miners trapped underground last week died. Joseph Matunjua is president of the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union of South Africa. He says mine owners have for long paid lip service to safety issues, focusing instead on profits. Matunjua says owners should invest in technology that improves the safety of workers.
Safety has been the challenge in the history of mining in South Africa. Yes, there were some legislations that were passed that were to avoid accidents. But these accidents are still happening. Of which we believe that the mines are not doing enough. They are chasing the profit in the expense of the lives of the workers. They are not investing much on new innovations and research. Therefore, in such deep mines like this, surely you must have a research that always improves the technology of detecting what believed to be the cause of the accident. So these workers are earning a slave salary, and then the mines are failing to provide adequate safety.
One would think that doing deep level mining, that is by itself is dangerous. So what do you think the mining companies can do or the government can do?
I think it's to put new regulations. For instance, the safety threshold should be in place to say, if maybe you pass 1 kilometer or 2 kilometers, these are the standards of safety that is expected or is required as a must that must be in place. As we go deeper, also the safety should be improved to measure the risk that the workers will be exposed to.
What about seismic activities? What is this fall of ground and what causes that?
The fall of ground is in twofold. One, it's a lack of proper support of the roof of the mine. The second one is a seismic event that you just spoke about, of which majority of the mine workers, they do not have access of the information when the seismic event takes place. It's only the line management that has a first-hand information. So if they are chasing a profit, they will be compromised themselves to evacuate the workers from the production line. For instance, the one from Sibanye Platinum, I believe, and I still stand by what I'm saying, those workers could have been saved because the first seismic event of 2.5, that was a largest or a high level of a seismic event, of which if we had a responsible management that put the lives or the safety first, they should have withdrawn all the workers from the face and direct them to the waiting place, a safety place, and wait for certain hours before they resume their operation.
Joseph Matunjua is the president of the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union of South Africa. He was speaking with me from the city of Witbank in Mpumalanga province. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, May 7th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Burundi's opposition has accused the ruling party of harassment and intimidation during the ongoing campaign for the country's controversial constitutional amendment referendum launched last week. Moses Javier Rimana has the story from Bujumbura.
Today marks 6 days since the Independent Electoral Commission officially launched the nationwide campaign to oppose or support the amendment of the country's constitution. More than 20 political parties are campaigning for or against the revision of the constitution, which may see the scrapping of the presidential term limits. Burundi opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, who opposed the amendment of the constitution, said that his members were harassed and intimidated by the ruling party Sindede FDD members.
I don't know if it is due to panicking that these guys from the Sindede FDD are blocking people to join the meeting place. They are threatening transporters that if they dare hire their cars to us, they will ban them. They could invade the place we were supposed to hold our meetings.
Burundi's ruling party, CNDD-FDD, declined to comment on record, but denied the allegation that their members have been menacing the opposition supporters. Prosper Nahoramie is the spokesman of the Independent Electoral Commission. He says that the Electoral Commission knows nothing about the allegations made by the opposition, and that for now, the report they have is that the referendum campaigns are going on well. He said that all those opposing and supporting the amendment of the constitution have got equal rights to campaign. As Burundi on 17th this month is expected to vote for or against the constitution amendment, it is yet to be known whether the regional mediated dialogue will resume, if at all, the constitution is amended that will see parts of the Arusha agreement scrapped, which includes the presidential term limit. Agathon Rwasa said that the East African community leaders didn't do enough.
We don't think that they will be able to move forward because they neglected ever since to do whatever was in their possibility to help this dialogue move forward. Unless they do it to try to help the regime to continue persecuting people.
The country's constitution was on the center stage of the political crisis since 2015 after the incumbent president, Pierre Nkurunziza, vied for a controversial third term in the office. Critics say that the amendment of the constitution is nothing but to pave way for the incumbent president to rule the country until 2034. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The South Sudan government says it is ready to negotiate with anybody, anytime and anywhere because it has always wanted peace for the country. This comes after the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGA, has invited the main parties to Ethiopia for consultations. The regional group says it wants to break the stalemate during the next round of talks slated for May 17th. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay says the regional body's shuttle diplomacy has so far failed to produce results because IGAD has so far not been able to iron out the differences between the positions of the parties.
What I know is that when the IGAD delegation came to us here and they went back in Addis Ababa for 4 days, and our advice to them was that as long as you have decided to go in for a settling diplomacy does not mean that you visit me once and you go back, talk to others once and you go back. You are supposed to carry messages and proposals and positions from the different parties, exchange views, and you come up with your own proposals as well so that you can at least bring the parties together and make them understand the situation better. But if you come once and then you decide to call the party, then definitely your efforts of settling diplomacy are bound to fail. Because so far, when they came to us here, they did not even tell us as to whether they have reached anything with the opposition on the other side on any of the points. Instead, what they brought to us were actually issues that widened the gap further.
So, as you said, Minister, there are widening gaps between your position and that of the rebels. At some point, people thought that both sides were intransigent. So, has there been any change in the positions?
Well, the government had never been there. We clearly stated last time that the position which were presented on Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 are negotiating positions. The opposition so far has not tabled anything before the mediators up to now. Instead, they wait for the position prepared by mediators and they pick that position. which is not correct. An example is that they are talking of none of the parties should have even a simple majority in the parliament. If there is no simple majority, if you have 50-50 in the cabinet, it means that the cabinet will never pass any resolution. So to us, in fact, the position which they brought has even widened the gap further.
The next consultation is coming up probably this week, May 10th to the 12th, and then the next round is the 17th. Do you think it's worth it to go if these positions have not been ironed out?
Well, it is not advisable to call the parties as long as IGAD has not yet ironed out some of these differences, at least to bridge the gap. And as long as the gap is getting wider and wider, then why call the parties? Why call people for an obvious outcome?
Meaning an obvious outcome of failure?
Yes, definitely.
So does that mean the South Sudan government will not attend or will attend this meeting?
We are ready to negotiate with anybody, anytime, anywhere, and so forth. Because what we need is peace for our people. But unfortunately, and to our surprise, the mediators, instead of asking the other party, instead of asking the opposition to give their written position, they instead respond to our position, which is not, to me, in my weak opinion, I believe that this is not supposed to be the position of a mediator.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. More than 100 people have died in Kenya in the last month due to heavy rains in different parts of the country, according to the latest statistics from the Kenya Red Cross Society, which is now asking the Kenyan government to declare a national disaster.
This is the third month since Kenya started experiencing heavy rains and some places have been declared no-go zone. Property has been lost and learning in some areas has been paralyzed as some schools have been submerged. Kenya Red Cross Secretary General Abbas Gullet says even though schools have opened, but students have not been able to learn because their schools are being used as emergency shelters while other schools have been swept away.
Schools, in fact, I could say the numbers are beyond even 100, but there are 29 are said to be submerged because a number of schools also have become the IDP camps where people have taken refuge in those compounds. 32 counties have been affected. So you could see the extent and the enormity of the challenge that we have here. So road damage, and this has affected the movement of supplies and people.
Leaders are now calling upon the government to intervene and take appropriate measures to curb the situation. Sabina Aron is education director in Kisumu County, a county that has immensely been affected by the rains.
12 schools were affected to a level that they were not able to open on Monday, the 30th of April, 2018. However, the rains are erratic and the amount of floods, any particular school changes from day to day.
On the other hand, security officers in affected areas are trying to ensure the residents are safe. The officers say there is a high risk of residents being affected with communicable diseases like malaria. Kisumu County Commissioner Pauline Dola says the government is working to ensure flood relief and medical care are offered to affected persons.
Security team and Muhoroni sub-county security team, we've been going around checking the havoc that the recent floods have caused. And the government is organizing for some food relief. This will be distributed to those victims. And we are also in liaison with both the county government and national government to ensure that we get some medication, especially malaria.
However, Nandi County Governor Stephen Sang has suspended ongoing public works to reduce damage and losses.
Over the last 2 months, our county has recorded extensive loss of property, public infrastructure, and utilities due to the heavy downpour. The devastation caused by the heavy rains have pounded the county and has forced us to review our road maintenance activities. Therefore, I do hereby suspend all the ongoing works.
Affected residents seeking refuge are now asking the government to ensure they are safe while those who lost their loved ones blame the government for negligence, even though they had been given prior warning.
People from this place should take caution. This place is next to Nairobi, and it attracts many people. So water dynamics are different, and we are also next to Ngong Hills. If it rains in Ngong, water tanks are too high, so it's important we be careful.
The Kenya Meteorological Department has warned that the rains will go on for the next 5 days, while the Red Cross says it needs more than 400 million Kenya shillings for emergency funding. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
For Daybreak Africa, posting here is Samson Omalay in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with match day one results of the CAF Champions League played this past weekend. Title holders Wydad Casablanca of Morocco survived a late siege by Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa in Pretoria to force a 1-1 draw. In the other Group C match, Horoya of Guinea kept a 100% away record in the competition this season by edging Port of Togo 2-1 in Lome, with captain Abubakar Kamara scoring the winner. TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo made an impressive start in Group B by whipping fellow former African champions Entete Sative of Algeria 4-1 in Lubumbashi. In Group D, favourites Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia, the only winners of all five present and past CAF club competitions, came from behind to hold Primeiro Augusto of Angola 1-1 in Luanda. In the same group, Mongaliso Shongwe scored on 80 minutes to earn Mbambe Swallows of Swaziland a 1-1 draw away to 2016 Champions League semi-finalist Zesco United of Zambia Ndola. Deji Ogenyebo and Ferdinand Ubum are sports journalists who were not surprised at the weekend's match day one results in the group stages of the CAF Champions League.
Well, still some dominant names in the CAF competitions. Unsurprisingly, TP Mazembe, their forte has always been the CAF Champions League, and they are back better, eating Etienne Sertif for 4, ended 4-1. For Wydad Casablanca, surprisingly, they ploughed a 1-1 draw against Mamelodi Sundowns. It's a good result away from home.
For Wydad Casablanca, I do not think it's a surprise, owing to the fact that they are the title holders of this competition. I think that alone is a confidence booster. You know, for Mamelodi Sundowns, they won the competition a couple of seasons ago, as well as TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo. These are teams that have tradition over the years.
Staying with football, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa will face Spanish giant Barcelona on May 16 in an international club friendly match. The friendly against Barca is expected to be confirmed in Spain later today and will be staged at the 90,000 capacity Soccer City Stadium in Soweto. Coach Pitso Mesemane is the coach of the Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa.
It will be the second time Mamelodi Sundowns play FC Barcelona. But it's a different one. There's Messi on it, and there's Iniesta, there's Busquets. I think it's an honor for the team to benefit from such an opportunity.
And now to athletics news. William Yagon of Kenya and Amelewok Fakadu of Ethiopia took their respective titles at the Harmony Geneva Marathon for UNICEF and IWAF bronze medal road race on Sunday.
That was Samson Omalay reporting from Abuja, Nigeria. And that is it for this Monday, May 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very productive week.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga have agreed to end their political animosity. A discussion on Kenyan politics on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important after-news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
It is